That's why I don't read the newspaper, because it's garbage. And the editor that let it come out is garbage.
Or do you do what everybody else in the media does, just create some shit and throw it on the wall and see what sticks, which is what I see happening everywhere.
Where are we at in society today? I'm a man. I'm 40.
When my time on earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my
All right, it is Sunday, September 22nd, 2019, and for Patreon subscribers, it is Monday, September 23rd for the rest of yous. Welcome to Menace to Society, where we dive in under the hood, behind the scenes, into college football, college athletics, coaching, try to give you a different perspective from anyone else. We are at the end of the first quarter of college football, about to begin the second quarter, 4 weeks in of a 16-week season, right? Mm-hmm. And week four update. How about the biggest news of the week? The defending national champions. The best team in college football over the past 2 years finally falls to Pitt.
To Pitt.
H2P. Hail to Pitt, man.
UCF. So
Pitt always has one of these games.
They're good for one a year.
So I've mentioned it before, and I thought it was a hilarious response. And I actually poised the question. So there's a podcast that I enjoy, and they brought me down for the Miami Florida game. It's the Big Three roll up, and I after like the first couple games when Florida State looked awful, Miami looked down, and Florida looked lackluster. I sent him a message. I was like, "Are you guys going to bring UCF on as like one of the? I don't know if they're a Big Four.
Yeah, Big Four roll up."
And so they immediately, right after the loss, put out an application denied for UCF. I thought it was really funny, but
that's pretty good.
What a run by UCF! Obviously, still a really good football team. What a win by Pitt! It definitely UCF was dying for another undefeated year so they could just burn down college football.
Well, they needed it, and they scheduled some big games this year that you know could make them in the national conversation, you know, Stanford, Pitt, some of the big Power Five programs. And unfortunately, they didn't beat them all. So now you're out of the conversation for good.
Well, that's what happens when you play an FBS schedule, a Power Five schedule, I guess. You play a Power Five schedule, you might lose a game if you're not really, really good.
Yeah.
The other game that was insane, how about UCLA? Chip Kelly down 32 points late in the third quarter. They come back and beat Mike Leach in Washington State. That was insanity.
Yeah, that I mean, whew, finally got that offense cooking a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, well, yeah. That was honestly like the what do they call it? The Pac-12 after dark. That's what that was. It was like I don't know, the boogeyman came out. It was wild. But anyways, like I said, we are done with the first quarter of college football, and this is the first time I want to really analyze teams, talk about teams, talk about what I see from teams. As this is my first year just really submersing myself into the film on a national level. So I just want to share my thoughts. And what I really think that I want to call this, after the first quarter, I want to provide a blurry vision into college football because it is not a clear picture. This is far from anything relevant to the final conversation, but you're starting to see shapes. You just woke up. You need to rub your eyes. You're starting to see a blurry vision of what college football will be this year. And the first thing I want to talk about is when I analyze a team, and this goes back to my career, when I analyze a football team, here's what I look at. You know, the state of college football, first quarter evaluation. First thing I look at is how is your first and second down efficiency? Because most of your snaps on offense and defense are first and second down. So how good are you at first and second down? How efficient are you? That's the most important stat in college football. The next most important stat is how are you on what I call money downs? A lot of people call money downs. That is third down, fourth down, in the red zone. And the biggest thing that I see in college football when you watch analysts and things like that, they talk about, so-and-so has the fourth best red zone offense. They get points 90% of the time. I will always go back to this. Points in the red zone are not an offensive victory. Touchdowns in the red zone are. If you have the ball at the 22-yard line and you get a field goal, that is an offensive fail. It is a field goal team success because you made the field goal. But don't put that victory on the offense. I want to know how well does a team score touchdowns in the red zone? That is, it's time to get paid, right? You're on the 20-yard line. It's time to capitalize. So that's the second thing. The third thing I want to know is how explosive are you on offense? And how well do you defuse explosions on defense? Because that is the name of the game. It is really hard to get 4 to 5 yards every play and march 80 yards and score. The only way it becomes a common occurrence is with explosions. So how well does your offense provide explosions? How well does your defense prevent explosions? That's the third thing I look at. And then the fourth thing I look at is, how much of an advantage do you gain in the kicking game? Is it a major advantage? Is it an impact element of your program? Is it even keel? Kind of doesn't help, doesn't hurt. Or is it a detriment to your program? So over the next couple weeks, I want to really start to put together some studies and analyze those four factors, because I think they're the most important factors in the game. The last one being, how well do you protect the ball and how aggressive are you at getting the ball? Turnovers, right? That's obviously the name of the game. If you protect the ball, hold on to the ball, aren't sloppy with the ball, you're going to be more successful on offense, and vice versa. If you create turnovers, if you're disruptive, that changes everything. So those are what I deem the five most important things when you analyze any football team. So we're going to start a new segment. It's called What I See on Film. And it all starts with Pro Football Focus, the best analytics company in the game. So I start with their grades. I want to look at a team's grades and say, all right, who's the best offense in the country? You tell me. And then I compare it with film evaluation, right? So the top graded out teams in college football as a whole, offense, defense, kicking game, bad opponents, good opponents, doesn't matter. This is a grade. It's either yes or no. Did you do your job? Plus, minus. Simple. Number one, Georgia. Number two, Ohio State. Number three, Alabama. Number four, LSU. Number five, Oklahoma. Number six, Penn State. Three SEC teams. Two Big 10 teams, one Big 12 team. And the next one is Wisconsin. So it's like I said all along, and I even said it on Twitter, there's three contenders in the SEC. There's three contenders in the Big 10 legitimately right now. It'll clarify. There won't be three in each conference. There certainly won't be three from a conference going to a playoff. So anyone that is saying that, just mute them on Twitter, unfollow them, don't go to their website. That's outrageous. But there are three contenders in the Big 10, three contenders in the SEC, and then one from the Big 12 in Oklahoma, and the obvious other one is Clemson. Though I will tell you right now, they are not playing as elite as everyone wants to make them. They're the 16th graded football team in America. The only caveat is they play absolutely no one. And I went at somebody on Twitter earlier today, or you know what, maybe it was our Menace to Sports account. Somebody mentioned Ohio State and Oklahoma don't play anyone, so don't even mention them in a national conversation. And I saw the tweet. I was like, excuse me? I mean, I'm not here to argue who had a stronger schedule. We'll find that out at the end of the year. But exactly. You are certainly not going to call out Ohio State and Oklahoma for playing no one and not include Clemson.
Who plays one ranked team, mind you.
Oh, at the end of the year, it'll be none. Zero. Yeah. They'll play zero ranked teams at the end of the year. You quote me on it. So, yeah, Clemson is – I mean, Clemson's going to cakewalk to the playoffs, so we're really talking about the next three teams. But people are just – I guess what the team that is getting mentioned a lot is Auburn, and I've watched
really?
All but one of their games. I think they're a solid football team, but they're right now graded, and my evaluation is exactly the same. The 36th best team in the country with a freshman quarterback who is a good player. He's not Trevor Lawrence. He's not like the next Peyton Manning. He's a good player. And the rest of the team is a good team. We're not even going to talk about a playoff contender in Auburn. It's not going to happen.
No, the only reason they would be in the conversation is because their defense is good.
Absolutely. So the reality is there's three in the SEC, three in the Big Ten, one in the ACC, one in the Big 12, and here we are. Let's figure out which of those eight teams are going to become the four teams. That's the moral of the story through the first quarter of college football. But then you just talk about the most explosive, the top offenses. So the top offenses in college football, the power rankings, number one, not even close, LSU. Joe Burrow is the best player in college football this year.
And most blessed.
Yeah, most blessed. Good point. One is LSU. Two is Oklahoma. And Jalen Hurts, what they've done is outrageous. And three is Ohio State. And that is Pro Football Focus grades. That is my film evaluation. The top three offenses. How about the top defenses in college football? Number one, not even close.
No.
Wisconsin. They are dominating everyone, including Michigan. Number two, Ohio State. Nine points a game. Dominating everyone. And we can have the conversation.
Including Miami of Ohio.
But we can have the conversation.
They haven't played anyone.
I know. Neither has Clemson. And we're going to mention them in a second. This is not relevant anymore. Stop talking about schedule. Let's talk about performance. And a grade is a performance. You can have a mistake. You can miss a block and still win the game by 40 against Miami of Ohio. I know that. Or 71. I get it. So Ohio State 2, 3, Georgia, 10 points a game. And what a performance by really both teams on Saturday, which we will get into shortly. Number four, Clemson, the fourth best defense in college football. Matter of fact, the only reason that they are as highly ranked as they are, 16th in the country, because their defense is the fourth ranked defense in the country.
It's not their offense.
Yeah, their certainly offense not. Is not holding it down.
Which is sad because they have one of the most talented offenses in the country. Yep. How about number five, the fifth highest ranked defense in the country is the Penn State Nittany Lions.
They are going to surprise some people, I think. I didn't think they were going to be this good.
No, and I still think they have quarterback issues, but that's what's going to hold them out of the national conversation. But the rest of the team is a really good football team. So let's take a look, let's analyze the top seven teams, because I'm going to leave Penn State out of this for now until I see their quarterback play at a level that I think can get them to a playoff contender spot. The first team you got to start with is Alabama, because they have the most success in the recent 4 or 5 years, and their offense is not playing like hot garbage. So
they're the standard.
So here's what I see when I watch Alabama. The first is the offense is rolling. Tua is playing really, really well. He's outplaying Trevor Lawrence across the board.
Oh, and it's not even close.
No. And here's what else they are. They're the third best passing offense in the country, third most efficient passing offense in the country, the ninth total offense in the country. They're also the fourth most explosive offense in the country. They have the fourth most plays of over 10 yards in America. Now, what they haven't been doing is running the ball very well.
That is not very Alabama of them.
No, this is. I'm going to tell you, it's a different world in SEC West right now. That's weird. Alabama's throwing the ball. LSU's throwing the ball. Neither can run the ball. It's like, what is going on? They haven't been running the ball with it. They're 57th in the country in total rushing yards. And a lot of times people say, yeah, but I used to get pissed like, yeah, but Navy's going to lead the country in rushing yards. So what I really look at is rushing average. Let's say you run it 15 times a game. Maybe you're that good at throwing it. I can't knock you. But if you're good at running the ball, then you should average a decent amount of yards per run. And they're 35th in the country as far as average per rush. And in my opinion, when I look at their schedule, they only have two games before the SEC championship game, which against Georgia, that will be a big, big, big game, obviously. They have two games. The obvious one, the matchup of the South, is against LSU. And people will say Auburn. I get it. Only because it's a rivalry, I will count it.
Yeah. Alabama is just going to murder Auburn this year.
Well, it's a rivalry game. I can't say that.
I know. But I mean,
it's a rivalry, and Auburn's not terrible. So, no, they're a good team.
They're not as good as they're being.
Yeah, but I'm not ready to say that. No one would have said Auburn would return a field goal and beat Alabama.
Well, exactly.
It's a rivalry game.
It's a rivalry.
All bets are off.
I actually called that.
Okay, anyways. So they got to play LSU. That's their big matchup, and they should beat Auburn, but it's a rivalry. You never know what will happen. But and then obviously the inevitable matchup with Georgia, and no one will ever convince me that anyone in Florida
in the East
will compete with Georgia. The East is a one team race, not even close. The West is a two team race, not even close, and that's what we're dealing with. Three teams in the SEC, right?
Yep.
So that is Alabama. That's how I view Alabama. I will tell you who's been most shocking and impressive to me has been Ohio State. I did not expect this fast of a nationally elite performance by their quarterback or their defense. They have the second best defense in the United States of America right now. They are number two in total defense rushing average, the number one red zone defense in the country. They have the most sacks in the country at 20.
Thanks, Chase.
Yeah, right.
Well, I think everybody would be shocked by this. I mean, that when you talked about Ohio State, even when people talk about Ohio State now, it's all about Justin Fields and the offense. The thing that's the most impressive is the defense.
And don't get me wrong. Again, I'm going to keep referencing it. I know they haven't played anyone great. I understand that. However, Chase Young will do what he's doing now against anyone. Trust me. I've watched the film. But here's what they also have. The second highest graded quarterback in the United States of America behind Athens, Ohio's own Joe Burrow.
That's crazy.
Justin Fields is the second best quarterback in the country right now on film. They're throwing the ball very efficiently, fifth in the country. They're running the ball very well, 15th in the country. And they are 18th in the country on third down, 6th in the country on red zone touchdowns. This team is legitimate. They are real. And we're going to find out in about, 2 weeks? 3 weeks when we play with when Ohio State takes on Wisconsin. And they got to get through their first bigger road test against a lackluster Nebraska team. Obviously, game day's going there to overhype the matchup. Yep. And then they got to play a Michigan State team at home at night. That should be a good game, but a night game, first night game in the shoe, not going to happen. So now we're talking about a bye week, and then we're going to get to Wisconsin eventually, right?
Yeah, the only problem you have with Michigan State is their defense is legit, but
their offense is putrid.
Yeah.
But yeah, their defense is legitimate. Then let's talk about who I think right now is almost undeniably the best team in the country. I wouldn't say undeniably. I think Georgia is the right now playing the best in the country, but LSU is right up there. Just talk about this. Imagine, let's rewind ourselves to the Les Miles era of LSU football. The dynamic run game with Leonard Fournette, the stout defense with freak athletes that you question if they're even human. That's how freaky they are. And they just could not ever get over the hump because they couldn't throw it from me to you at all. Now we're talking about they are throwing the shit out of the ball. The savior of the program, is a kid from Southeast Ohio, Athens, Ohio. Jose Barrose.
All that talent down there in the South, and they had to rely on a kid from Athens, Ohio to save it.
They are throwing the shit out of the ball. The second best passing offense in the country. The highest scoring offense in the country. The fourth most pass efficient offense in the country. And the top graded quarterback in America, Joseph Burrow. Here's the issue. And this is very un-LSU. They are the 96th best team in the country running the ball.
Yikes.
That is not an Eddie Orgeron Baton Rouge offense. They are also the 113th team in America in explosive plays. Ooh. Now, that's the moral of the story is if this team can start running the ball and their defense can improve, Joe Burrow and the firepower in the pass game is going to put them They're right there. They are primed and ready to take on Alabama. I'm not saying they're ready to beat Alabama yet, but they're there. Their defense is statistically average, 36th overall. So they need to get that cleaned up. Obviously, the Texas game is killing them in statistics because Texas threw for 9 million yards. Right. So that's LSU for you. Now if you take a look at Clemson, the ever-present in college football, Trevor Lawrence is in a sophomore slump. The good thing is it won't matter until the postseason exactly. Because the ACC is so bad, they literally could sit Trevor Lawrence and they could send him to the Manning Passing Academy for the rest of the season and bring him back for the post year.
Maybe they should, honestly.
They might need to.
They really just have 8 weeks of practice.
How about this for you? Trevor Lawrence is the 58th best quarterback in the country graded by Pro Football Focus. 58th against no one, by the way. They have the 40th passing offense, 55th pass efficiency offense, 47th on third down, the 44th best red zone offense. Now, what I will tell you is Travis Etienne is the real deal. The second best running back that I've seen in the country behind Jonathan Taylor of Wisconsin. They have the 7th best rushing average in America, 8th in explosive runs. He is really dynamic. They're also, the real problem here is they're turning the ball over a lot. They have 8 turnovers on this year already, 101st in America. Now, Brent Venables has the defense playing really tough. 7th overall defense. I mean, I could go list 4th scoring defense, 3rd red zone defense. Moral story is, and who would have thought, Clemson's offense is lackluster right now. And Trevor Lawrence, who I deemed the best quarterback in college football going into the year, is not playing like it. So that's going to need to change. Fortunately, he has, what do they have, eight or nine more scrimmages before the playoffs?
Yeah, he's got about 8 or 9 weeks of just practice. He'll
figure it out. You know,
he's going
to It's a lot of time to figure it out.
Glorified 7-on-7. Yeah, so
absolutely. I'll tell you the team that I'm interested to see how they develop, because everyone wants to talk about them as a nationally relevant team, a potential playoff team. I want to see Oklahoma as they develop, because I don't see them as a playoff team. People have them ranked 4th, 5th, 3rd. They have them ranked ahead of Wisconsin, which is asinine. Wisconsin would beat Oklahoma right now by 14 points. And I mean that. Their offense, now I'm taking nothing away from Lincoln Riley, Jalen Hurts, or that offense. They have the first in total offense, first in pass efficiency offense, first in rushing offense, 8.3 yards a carry, second in scoring offense. But that has never been the issue in Norman, Oklahoma. Their defense, though improved, though showing some swagger under Alex Grinch, is below average. The 78th pass efficiency defense in the country. And we've known it. Oklahoma can't stop the pass. They haven't in years.
They never have. Yeah.
Never. 71st in the country in rushing average, stopping a running back. 53rd overall. So for Oklahoma to ever be ranked ahead of Wisconsin, someone has to see the defense play decent at least, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how you rank them that high. Their schedule isn't anything special, so it's not like they've been facing, you know, elite teams, but that's just the name across the chest getting the ranking.
That's 100%.
Well, they definitely
it's not even the name across the chest. Otherwise, Ohio State would be ranked number one. There's no bigger brand, right? It's really the story that is. It's the Jalen Hurts transfers from Alabama. Would love to see a Tua Jalen matchup. Mm-hmm. Like it's the story combined with the name on the chest.
Yeah.
So let's go to the next one. How about Georgia? Georgia's playing. They're playing really better than anyone else in the SEC right now. They are. 10th most efficient passing offense. They're running the ball very effectively. 3rd in rushing average. DeAndre Swift he might be better than Travis Etienne. I mean, you're talking about, those are the three best running backs of college football. Travis Etienne, DeAndre Swift, and Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah, I mean, he looks like another one of those Georgia running backs that's just going to go out and do what Georgia running backs do.
Absolutely. 5th most explosive runs in America. Then their defense, the 4th ranked scoring defense, 5th ranked rushing defense, 11th overall defense. Georgia is for real. So if I'm telling you, Alabama has their hands full. They got two real ass teams that they got to play. And don't feed me that line like that. They always do every year in, year out. Mm-hmm. LSU's never looked like this. Ever.
No.
Georgia was not as good as this last year. They weren't. But the team I want to talk about is Wisconsin. Wisconsin's the most disrespected and undervalued team in college football. They have the bar none. Watch the film. Don't just get your notes from an intern. Watch the film. Or, just look at the stats. They have the best defense in college football through the first quarter of the season. Let's just go through it. The number one defense in the United States of America in total defense, pass efficiency defense, rushing defense, rushing average defense, scoring defense, opponent explosive runs defense, first down defense, third down defense. Who is going to argue that they're not the best defense in the country today? How about this? How's their offense? Well, I don't know. The best running back in the country, Jonathan Taylor, best graded running back, leading the country in rushing. Oh, their quarterback, 15th most efficient passer in the country. That team is really, really hard to beat. And Ohio State's going to have their hands full. And so would Alabama or Georgia or Clemson or LSU. They would have their hands full with this Wisconsin team. They are really good. Now, I will tell you this. Georgia does look legit. I like Georgia a lot. But they belong in the category of maybe UCF. That's a good example. They haven't won a national championship in 29 years. So I was, 39 years. So I'm 35 years old. I was not born when they won their last national championship. So let's talk about some teams that have more experience winning recent national championships than the Bulldogs out of Athens, Georgia. BYU, that's one. Who else? Colorado. How about Georgia Tech, Florida State, Tennessee, Nebraska, Washington. Those teams have more experience than Georgia at winning national championships in the last 40 years.
Notre Dame, too. But
yeah, I mean, I didn't bring up the obvious ones.
Yeah.
But how about this?
Ohio State also.
That brings me to this point. Do you want to know how you go from an underachieving program that hasn't been nationally relevant into a nationally relevant power? And Michigan fans, ADs.
Take note.
Take note. First of all, you hire a really, really, really good coach. And then, matter of fact, a guy that has a blueprint for being the program you want to be. Not a guy that overachieved at Stanford, had marginal success, or not marginal. He had success in the NFL. I'm talking about someone that has the blueprint, worked for Urban Meyer, Nick Saban, or did it somewhere else. And then here's what you do. This is what Georgia did. Open up your checkbook and spend about 200 mil.
Yeah, 200 mil, that'll do.
So what do you need? You need better facilities? All right, 175 million in a facilities. Oh, you need to recruit really well? All right, how about this? We'll take the rest of the country. Who spends the most? You tell me. Okay, that program, we're going to spend $1.5 million more than them, more than anyone in the country. And then, you know what we're going to do? We're going to get some really good coaches to the tune of $13 million. That's how you flip the program real quick.
That'll do it.
Because money talks. But moral of the story is, it's really cool to see this landscape unfold. And like I said, the vision is a little blurry, but you can see it. It's coming. And that's what I see on film. But before we get to our game of the week, and boy, what a game it was. Yep. I do want to share with you guys what we've been using this year to try to capitalize on all the research we are doing into college football. So check out one of our sponsors. At the end of a hard week, it's great to sit down, take some time off, and watch some football. Game-winning touchdowns on two-minute drives, running backs racing down the sidelines with no one to stop them. There's nothing like the NFL, and there's no better way to make the games even more exciting than to throw some money on them and bet. So do the smart thing. Go to mybookie.ag. No one gives you more ways to win than they do. MyBookie's got the fastest payouts and better lines than any other sports book. Don't forget, where you're betting is just as important as who you're betting on. And MyBookie.ag is the best in the business. It's where I play and where you should too. I wouldn't be telling you guys to bet on them with them if they weren't the best. So do the smart thing. If you're going to bet this football season, bet with MyBookie. If you're the kind of guy that likes to bet a little and win a lot, try a parlay. If all your picks come through, you'll multiply your winnings. And no matter how you bet, the NFL season is the best time of the year. Join now and MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use promo code MENACE, M-E-N-A-C-E, to activate the offer. That's promo code MENACE. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, and you get paid. All right, well, a game that I think I'm glad I didn't put money on because I thought it would be – I did not think it would be this good of a game or that Notre Dame would have played. I did not think Notre Dame was who I watched on Saturday. So the one thing that I did here pregame – is in games where DeAndre Swift scores a touchdown, Georgia was 11-1, and now they're 12-1. By the way, yeah. But here was my I took some notes and I want to share them with you. My early takeaway of the first half was Notre Dame's pass protection was great. Their defense mm-hmm. was swarming. Their tackling was excellent, and their toughness was evident. And that's what I hadn't seen. That's what I didn't see last year in the playoff.
Well, and when we broke down the game, that's the opposite of what evidence was on film. I mean, their pass protection had not been great. They led, I think, the nation in missed tackles. I mean, they weren't. None of that was evident up until this game.
I will say this: one of the most, I think, the most, and no one's really talking about it. They mentioned it. I think the most impactful thing in this game was not Jake Fromm. It was not Georgia's defense. It was not Ian Book. It was not Lawrence Cager. It was not DeAndre Swift. The most impactful thing in the game was Sanford Stadium. The audience or the crowd.
Yeah.
I mean, the silent cadence operation at Notre Dame killed their offense multiple times. Liam Eichenberg, their left tackle, their vet, he had three drive-killing mistakes. In a game like this, your veteran players need to show up. And that's evidence that they were not prepared for that sound and or he was scared or nervous.
That place was rocking.
It was rocking.
It was you could see it on the TV. I don't even see it.
I mean, there was multiple false starts. There was a third down. The ball got snapped early, and they had
he fumbled it, and luckily he picked it up and threw it away. But he converted. It actually converted into a catch.
But my point is, that was impactful, and that is a coaching error. And to his credit, Brian Kelly said it at halftime. He said, "Our silent cadence operation is killing us right now. We got to get it fixed," and it did. It killed him. The false start late in the third quarter on third and two with 3 minutes left was brutal. They had to call a timeout on third and seven then because the crowd made an impact, then had a broken up pass and had to punt. That was a critical mistake. And then I will say this, complete mismanagement in the two-minute drill by Notre Dame at the end of the game.
Yes.
They wasted 7 seconds trying to spike the ball instead of calling a timeout and then called it anyways. Yep. Now, the only I guess good part was they ended up getting 2 shots into the end zone, but who knows what they could have done with those extra 7 seconds. I think the biggest thing I noticed in the second half was the tempo of Georgia, what the Georgia offense. They put the pedal to the metal late in the third quarter when Notre Dame was gassed and Notre Dame started faking injuries, having helmet issues. They changed the game. The other thing they did was they opened up the offense. They started throwing the ball downfield. Jake Fromm had 59 yards passing at half. He was 11 to 12, so it's not like he was struggling throwing it, but 59 yards. And then James Coley opened it up in the second half. It was 13 to 10 Georgia going into the fourth quarter, but the tempo on offense, you could feel it watching the game. It was gassing Notre Dame's defense. And momentum was heavily in Georgia's favor in a major way, and Notre Dame needed to stop. And how about the fourth quarter opening drive? My guy, and when I say my guy, he is my guy. Lawrence Cager, the receiver from Georgia, the Miami transfer. Wow. And the throws by Jake Fromm. 59 yards passing at half. And they opened it up. I will tell you a side note story about Lawrence Cager. Lawrence Cager was going to commit to Ohio State. And then his dad got involved and started becoming really strange. And Urban ended up saying, "I don't think this is a good fit." Lawrence didn't know where to go, so he was going to go to Alabama. And then he went to commit to Alabama, and they were full; they couldn't take him. And then we had decided we weren't going to take him. And then he was stuck. So then he goes to Miami, plays at Miami, has a decent career, but then he decides after his fourth year, I don't like it down here. I mean, this is not my future. We don't throw the ball. So I had just gotten fired. I'm out of coaching. End of last year, he hits me up. "Coach, I need to talk." So we start talking. He says, I think I'm gonna declare for the draft. I said, You should not declare for the draft. He said, "Coach, I have all these NFL scouts and people saying that I might be a second first round receiver, but we don't throw the ball. I need to get out of here." I was like, "Well, are you gonna graduate?" He said, "Yeah, I can graduate next in the spring." I said, The last thing you want to do is waste your career on going to the league right now, leaving early, declaring. And so him and I talked on the phone 2 or 3 times, and I convinced him not to go to Georgia. I didn't know where, but I told him to contact his high school coach, announce that he was transferring, put some feelers out, and find a home and play football. Like put one more year on tape. Fortunately, he lands in Georgia. And when I watched him last night, I immediately texted him. He texted me back. I was like, "Man, I'm so proud of you," because I will go back to my statements pregame. Georgia does not have good skill on the perimeter. And what did I say? I said, the one guy I'm waiting for to show up is Lawrence Cager, who I recruited and love and think has the potential to be a great player. And who showed up in the fourth quarter? Yeah. Lawrence Cager. So I don't like to say I told you so, but I told you so.
That touchdown catch was awesome.
And the whole drive.
Yeah, well, true.
He was dominant the whole drive. Yeah. And the touchdown catch was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And then my favorite part of the game, I mean, full disclosure, I get way too angry at announcers when they say dumb shit. I really do. But Gary Danielson, who, as a caveat, I think he's one of the better ones in the industry. So it's late in the fourth quarter, around 7 minutes left, and there Georgia gets stopped, third down, down towards the red zone, and they're trying. You know, they're discussing if he's gonna kick a field goal or go for it, right? And he says, "Oh, when you're up 10, I don't know what a field goal gives you. They have to go for this." And I almost choked I had a chip. I was eating a chip. I almost choked. And I start screaming at the TV, like, what does a field goal give you up 10 with 7 minutes? This Notre Dame football team has scored one touchdown in 3.5 quarters of play. If you kick a field goal, you're going to force them to score two more in seven minutes.
Yeah, in seven.
The best part about it was as Notre Dame is driving down by 6 at the end of the game, mm-hmm. they're having to now score a touchdown instead of kick a field goal to go to overtime. This son of a bitch, Gary Danielson, says, man, I'll tell you what, Kirby Smart chose to kick a field goal earlier to force Notre Dame to have to score a touchdown here. What a great call. And I was sitting there like jaw dropped, like you couldn't even like.
You did not just say that.
Oh, man. But I mean, overall, kudos to Notre Dame. What a game.
I thought their defense played very well.
They played phenomenal. They played really well. I mean, they had 2 turnovers, which didn't help their cause. But I mean, 321 total yards to 339 total yards, mm-hmm. right? Notre Dame didn't run the ball worth a shit, that's for sure.
No, and you could tell from the get-go that that wasn't in the game plan. Yeah, they weren't going to try to line up and pound the ball on that defense. That was not the game plan.
You trying to win the game or are you trying to be stubborn?
Exactly. No, that defense was not going to let you, so why would you try?
And they were similar on third down. I mean, Notre Dame was had a little less they were 4 of 16 on third down. Georgia was 4 of 11. But anyways, what a game. And when I watched that game, that was too big to, and you know me, I would never say Notre Dame was a big time program. No,
I'm glad this is going to be on tape because I'm going to hold on to this.
Notre Dame looked like a legitimate top 10 football team, and they deserve to be. And Georgia looked really good too.
Yeah.
And so
it's something that Brian Kelly struggled with, and that Notre Dame, I mean, Notre Dame over the past 20, 25 years has struggled with is these big time matchups they've never shown up for. So for them to show up, I get it. They lost. They're probably out of the playoff contention, all that stuff. But in a weird way, as a Notre Dame fan, it's kind of a win.
I'll tell you this. There's a lot of football to be played.
That's true. Well, that's true.
One loss.
If that's Notre Dame's one loss, yeah, and they can win convincingly down the stretch and some people lose some games, watch out now.
Yeah, losing mm-hmm. that game in that fashion – well, away in Athens at night?
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
you can't hold that against them.
It's almost a positive. Right? I mean, obviously, winning the games will be a bigger positive.
But let me tell you this.
The way they played.
Let me tell you this. Being involved with football teams like that, and especially like it happened at Ohio State after we lost to Michigan State, mm-hmm. they got destroyed by Clemson. It's like you have that. You might lose a game like that. But when you walk off the field having gone toe-to-toe with what's supposed to be the nation's elite,
yeah.
even if you lose by 3 points, 6 points in a last-second drive, you don't score, you walk off the field saying, I mean, you're hungry. Yeah, you're motivated.
Exactly.
Watch Notre Dame now. Watch them. Watch out. They're going to go, and you think they worked hard before that game? They just got a little bit of taste of blood in their mouth. Mm-hmm. They got punched in the mouth, and now they're pissed. And now they're going to work a little harder. And I'm not sitting here claiming they're going to go to the playoffs or win anything big, quote me on this. If they respond correctly to that game, there's a lot of football to be played.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that's going to hurt them the most is that they don't have a conference championship to play. They don't have those, you know, those conference ties to help them. But
well, and I'll tell you, no. Well, that doesn't help. You know what else is going to kill them? USC sucks. Stanford sucks.
Yeah,
I mean,
the rest of their schedule.
Michigan sucks.
Yeah,
like preseason.
That Michigan loss is huge for them.
So I'm with you on the conference championship, but the real problem is no one that they play is holding up their end of the bargain.
Well, it's always nice to lose a game this early.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
if it's the last game of the year, you're yeah. done.
You
over.
Didn't come
gone.
Back from an early
exactly.
loss.
And the key now is going to be Georgia's success.
Yeah.
If mm-hmm. Notre Dame can win convincingly here on out, and Georgia can have happens if Georgia wins out, beats Alabama? All of a sudden, Notre Dame's like, hey, timeout.
Yeah. That's our only loss.
Our one loss was by 6
away.
On the road.
Yeah.
to them
early. Yeah. But anyways, what a game! What a great week of college football. And so we're also gonna want to mention. We have a full breakdown on our show, Menace to the Midwest. If you could look it up and hit subscribe and listen to it. We really broke down the Michigan-Wisconsin game because I think Wisconsin's one of the best, one of the top three teams in the country, top four teams in the country. They're playing like it right now, and they have the best defense in the country. So definitely check that out. We really break down why. And then we're going to take a break here. But then after the break, I want to dive into what has happened under Jim Harbaugh. So anyways, we'll be right back after this. support for Menace to Society comes from Manscaped, who is number one in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels.
Oh, man, this might be a little TMI here, but so I decided to manscape one day, and I just used some old clippers that I had from shaving my head, and I nicked my balls pretty good there, and it was, man, that was a bad deal. Hurt for a couple days.
Yeah, that doesn't sound fun. But that's why Manscaped has redesigned the electric trimmer. Their Lawnmower 2.0 has proprietary skin-safe technology, so this trimmer won't nick or snag your nuts. Manscaping accidents are finally a thing of the past. And don't use the same trimmer on your face that you're using on your balls. That's just nasty. Manscaped is also the Crop Preserver, an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. You already put deodorant in your armpits. Why are you not putting deodorant on the smelliest part of your body? Fortunately, because we've partnered up, you can get 20% off and free shipping if you use the code MENACE at manscaped.com. Always use the right tools for the job. Your balls will thank you. So I will tell you, so they sent us a care package, Manscaped did, and I'm not going to divulge anything weird or too much information, but it's really good products, man. It's like the little DOP kit, little packet, you know, the little thing they sent was high quality. All the lotions and everything, the scent is phenomenal. I would recommend just trying it out just once. Use the code MENACE. But anyways, so like I said before the break, we're going to detail right now. It's from our other show, so if you already listened to it, you can fast forward. But if you haven't, maybe you'll hear what the other show is all about and want to subscribe and listen. We're going to detail what has happened under Jim Harbaugh and what I think has gone wrong during his tenure and what is a common issue with offensive guru head coaches in college football. So I'm going to share the segment from our Midwest show as I think it is relevant to our national audience. So here it is. So anyways, let's dive into Jim Harbaugh. And my biggest thing, I'm screaming in the middle, towards the end of the first quarter, is I'm yelling at Jim Harbaugh. You had 2 weeks. Yeah. Josh Gattis, you had 2 weeks to prepare. And this is what you gave your players and fans?
Well, so did Wisconsin.
Well, I get that.
After the Army game, you should have had 3 weeks because you didn't prepare for Army, obviously. So you should have been preparing for 3 weeks.
Well, the moral of the story is they hired a guy who's never called a play, who got ran out of Alabama, then wanted to pop off about how he really called the plays at Alabama, even though Nick Saban ran him out of Alabama. And now here we are. Here we are. And here's the problem. Here's how I see it. Coming from the industry, 15 years in it, here's what I see. First, let's talk about the offensive roller coaster that has been Jim Harbaugh's tenure in Michigan. Yeah. And here is what I see. This is a coach that had a philosophy, had an offense at Stanford. It was really good and fit Stanford. And that was, what, 10 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Roughly.
Yeah, around there.
And so he gets into the NFL. And the NFL, it is a completely different football game. Now you have coordinators making $80 million a year, all this. I mean, it's just a completely different game, which is fine. You can take stuff from there and bring it to college. So then he gets hired at Michigan. And he brings in Tim Drevno and Jed Fish. Well, you know what? While I talk about this, check out Jed Fish's stats for the Jaguars the year before. So in 2014, I think he was the OC of the Jaguars. So they bring Jed Fish in, and I've had my history with Jed Fish because he wanted to talk about, I was so young, a young coach, and who are you going to trust your career with, this young coach or a guy that's been in the NFL? And so I did a bunch of stat work on him, and man, has he had an awful career everywhere. I mean, he's really been an awful offensive coordinator. And guess what? Guess what happened at Michigan? Jed Fish's offense was 69th in the NCAA in year one. Then in 2016, 58th in the NCAA, really started lighting the world on fire. And then what did he do? He ran. And I'm going to get into why I bet he ran after we talk about this history, right? So then he goes to UCLA. Now he's like an analyst somewhere. He's not even a coordinator anymore. So you see how that's going. So he leaves. Then Tim Drevno takes over entirely on offense. Now in 2017, they're 105th in the NCAA in offensive football. So then they need to revamp it. They get rid of him. Now it's time to bring in Pep Hamilton and Ed Warner. Bring them in. Ed Warner. He'll fix it. He'll do the job. And they did. They fixed it. They jumped to 50th in the NCAA, which is much better than 105th. Yeah. But I think it's a little lackluster for what people wanted out of Jim Harbaugh. Ah, so now I got it. They'll just get rid of Pep. Strip Ed of it, or maybe
Ed'll go to O-line.
Probably, Ed'll be right? He was the O-line coach. So now he's going to be we're going to bring in this guy, Josh Gattis. He is going to fix it. right? It's year five. Josh Gattis is going to fix it. So now they have the 97th offense in the NCAA, 11th in the Big Ten, 12th in scoring in the Big Ten. The offense has never eclipsed 50th. They've never been a top 49 offense under Jim Harbaugh. And here's why I think that's accurate. Because here's what happens, and I experienced it my entire career. When head coaches try to be play callers, offensive coordinators, if you may, they have too much going on, and especially as they progress in their head coaching career, they don't study offensive football. They let the game pass you by a little bit. And you see it going on right now with Chip Kelly at UCLA. Chip Kelly was the brightest offensive mind. He wanted Oregon with lesser players and then built it into this freak show, basketball on grass. And now you're seeing it with Jim Harbaugh. My opinion, why did Jed Fish run? Why are these coaches that are good coaches, why are they struggling at Michigan as coordinators? I believe the problem lies in Jim Harbaugh because the game has passed him by. And it happened with Urban Meyer. Now, when you're a CEO of a college football program, you have too much going on to stay ahead of the curve, to stay ahead of the game without, an all-star offensive staff. And I think Urban's greatest strength was realizing that he was stifling offensive production and fluidity. However, he disagrees strongly with several things that are staples in new age offensive football. And when those new things that were the new age of college football that have kind of passed Urban by and clearly have passed Jim Harbaugh by, when they wouldn't work, even if once, his beliefs that were relevant 10 years ago would resurface in a very abrasive fashion. And here's what I know is Urban knew it. He was self-aware and he did everything in his power to be the best CEO in college football. And that was, you know what? Ryan Day knows more than me about this topic. Let me just step out. That's why I hired him. I trust him. You do your thing. And that's what he did. And that's what he did better than I've ever seen. And that's what Nick Saban does. Now, what those guys do as CEOs, they challenge you. Like you may say, here's our identity. Here's what I want to do with this package. And they may sit there and challenge the shit out of it. But you know what happens? That just enhances it. And it really tests your belief in it. Because what happens if you're trying to stay ahead of the curve of college football? You're trying new shit.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, yeah, what he's doing essentially is he wants to see your conviction in it. How much do you know about it? And if you stand by it and pound the table or whatever, then Urban Meyer's going to trust you to do that with it.
Yeah,
with the offense.
And so what I'm seeing happen in Michigan is what I think happens far too often is Jim Harbaugh wants to control the offense because he's an offensive guy and the game has passed him by. And he's hiring some guys that are honestly not elite offensive minds or offensive coordinators. You're Michigan. What are we hiring a guy that got drove out of Alabama for that's never called a play? What are we doing that for?
Well, if he was an elite offensive coordinator, he would have become the offensive coordinator when Loxley left.
Well, that's been my whole point from Alabama, day one. Right? I mean, you would never take the Michigan coordinator job over the Alabama coordinator job with Tua and the freak show on offense. Exactly. That is instant head coach. Yeah. That's what that's called. Oh, are you going to become the coordinator at Alabama? Like, nope, I'm going to call the plays at Alabama for a year or two, and then I'm going to get a head job.
Yeah. All you have to do is succeed with one of the best quarterbacks in college football for 1 year, and then you're a head coach.
Then you're the hot name. Like, yeah. Oh, get
but
this
the,
guy.
The reality of of how the inner workings of college football, it's just mind-blowing to me, and I get it. I was on the inside. And what's really funny for me now, and I completely understand it, is and the caveat here is Urban Meyer on Fox Big Noon Kickoff or whatever it's called is phenomenal. It gives me something that I actually enjoy watching as opposed to Game Day where it's a horse and pony show of a bunch of characters. It's honestly like Disney World. Like Game Day is Disney World of college football.
That's why they started there this year.
Oh, exactly. We're putting on Mickey Mouse heads and it's comical. And the coolest thing about Game Day is the signs. And it's like, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, what
the funny
hell?
Signs. That's the only part that's
even those
good.
Have gone downhill.
Yeah, right. Those have gone downhill too. But what is funny to watch when I watch Urban is, and he's excellent at it. I knew he'd be good. I didn't know he'd be this good. He is phenomenal. And people love it, and they should. But what's really funny in knowing him is to watch him teach some things that I'm talking about, which he knows, he understands it. Like what is the current era of college football? He obviously knows it, but it's also stuff that I watched for 15 years being with him despise. I mean, he talked about, he did one thing on run pass options, right?
Yeah, RPOs are a big hot topic.
And so he wasn't really talking about run pass options. He was talking about something that Ryan Day brought to Ohio State about called it's a run throw option. It's not a run pass option. It's like a triple option. It's triple throw option, right? And it's something that he claimed he created at Utah, yet we never did it one time at Florida or early at Ohio State. But anyways, it's essentially where you read a guy and then it's either a give or a pull, and then you read another guy and it's either a throw or a run, right? A quarterback run. And so that's what the triple throw option is, what it is, right? You mm-hmm. read a defensive end. If he takes a running back, you pull it, and then you start to run. If the next guy takes you, you throw a bubble, you throw a flat route, you throw a slant, something like that, right?
Yeah.
And so it's just so funny to see him explain it because he hated it. And he used to get so pissed at Ryan Day when we would run a bubble and it would take so long, and he would just, I mean, he'd get irate. Like, how's a receiver supposed to block for that forever? How does he know where the ball's going? He despised it. Or he challenged it only because he didn't understand it fully. And now I'm watching him do it on Fox, and it's like, I'm sitting there like, you didn't even like that, man. I got my ass ripped for that. Ryan got his ass ripped for that. It's so funny. And the other thing he talked about was different types of passes, right? Movement key passes, isolation passes, and then progression passing. When he said the word progression passing, I almost shit my pants.
I remember that.
Because he didn't understand, didn't like progression passing. He almost fired a coordinator we had back at Florida who believed in progression passing because he thought it was like the antichrist of offensive football. Anyways, I got on a tangent there, but the moral story is Urban Meyer was so great because he knew his strengths, knew his weaknesses. He was self-aware, and he was able to empower people and trust people to do their job. Jim Harbaugh is not doing that. He is the problem, and all fingers need to point to him. Now, I think Josh Gattis is really not helping his cause.
Well, I mean, just more on that. What Urban did is he always hired well. The new guys he brought in, yeah. He wouldn't have brought in a Josh Gattis.
Well, that's what a good. That's what a good CEO okay. does.
More times than not, he hired well.
He made a couple bad promotions and hires, but I'm with you.
But I mean, more times than
not. Who didn't in college football? Yeah. I mean, you see it all the time. I mean, Alabama's made some bad hires and bad whatever. But yeah, that is what I see. What's going wrong at Michigan is Jim Harbaugh. The game passed him by, and he has not hired a coordinator that is a guru elite coordinator that he can fully trust and stay out of their way. He hires these guys that are good coordinators or average coordinators, and he can't not be involved, and he doesn't understand the game today fully. He's got too much going on, and that's just the reality of what's wrong in Michigan. All right, well, that's going to wrap it up for us. Thank you for tuning in. Please, like I said before, check out our website, menacetosocietypodcast.com. Be ready for our new platform to launch, menacetosports.com. And like I mentioned last episode, if you are interested in trying to become a part of our team, want to provide written content, have experience, or just have a passion to join kind of the movement that we're trying to create, please reach out to me directly, Zach, Z-A-C-H, at menacetosocietypodcast.com. And if you're interested in advertising or sponsorship, that platform is always open. And reach out to us, sponsorship at menacetosocietypodcast.com. Hope you enjoyed the show. Check out Menace to the Midwest. Subscribe to it. Also, check out our pro Ohio football sports show. It's called Pro-Ohio Sports, P-R-O-H-I-O Sports, on all podcast platforms. So check it all out. Let us know what you think. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. Hope you were entertained. Hope you enjoyed it. And if you didn't, as we say, go fuck yourself, San Diego.
That's why I don't read the newspaper. Because it's garbage. And the editor that let it come out is garbage.
Or do you do what everybody else in the media does, just create some shit and throw it on the wall and see what sticks, which is what I see happening everywhere.
Where are we at in society today? I'm a man. I'm 40.
When my time on earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my
Is that how it was?